Welcome to Climate Matters. This is the third segment of our discussion with Richard Perez from the Atmospheric Sciences Research Center here in Albany. Richard has been describing the trend lines for solar in terms of prices and in terms of the potential to greatly expand solar on our grid. So thank you and welcome again, Richard. Before we get started into some of the issues we've been discussing, perhaps you could share with us some of the upcoming events you've got on your calendar in the near term and get the word out about those.
Yeah, short-term events. There is one this Friday in Troy at the Hilton Garden Hotel on Route 7. It's all-day Friday. I think it starts at 7:30 in the morning. I will be speaking on the subject I'm speaking today with you. And another one will be on December 6th at the First United Unitarian Church of Albany. It's downtown Albany near SUNY Draper. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on December 6th, and that's, I think, it's free entry there. So I'll be also speaking about the same subject of very high penetration solar and low cost, big solar for the future.
Great, great. And then in previous segments, we've been talking a little bit about the recent papers that you've been an author on.
Where would people find them? I was part of a launch study in the state of Minnesota. The report just got out, and I will communicate the website with you. And for the state of Minnesota, we investigated how to produce firm power generation from an optimum amount of wind and solar in the state. And the plan for that state by their Horizon 2045 is to have the capability of switching fully to solar and wind with only 5% natural gas at a production cost which will be below 4 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's going to be a cost of generation from purely solar and wind with a tiny amount of natural gas at cheaper than their wholesale production cost today. So it's no charge to the ratepayers. It's going to be, and it doesn't even include any environmental benefits. So it's straight business comparison here. It's pure solar and wind, cheaper than we can do it today. So that's the result, the key result of that study.
And that's very valuable from a climate perspective. The primary orientation of this podcast and this show is climate, and one of the impediments to addressing the climate challenges we face and decarbonizing our grid is that many view the price point for increasing the penetration of solar as making it unaffordable, making the poor and vulnerable even more challenged in terms of paying their bill. And in terms of the utilities, the integration of solar being a problem. So carbon, addressing carbon, requires us to work on a cleaner supply of power. However, a cleaner supply of power is perceived as unachievable. What you are telling us is that it is achievable and it is affordable.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So for those who'd like to learn how it's achievable and affordable, please send an email to climatechops@gmail.com, climatechops@gmail.com. If you have questions about the discussion today, or if you'd like a copy of the report, we'll send you a link to the study that shows in a state like Minnesota, where we're looking at percentages of sun that do not match up against a Mexico or Arizona achieving 4 cents, 4.5 cents a kilowatt.
It's pretty close to New York,
in fact. Yeah. Great. So, Richard, getting back to New York here on Climate Matters, New York has a goal of, I believe it's 50% renewables by 2030. And New York's model does New York's model in terms of a regulatory framework account for solar at a utility scale as a firm resource, or is it currently generally paid for as a non-firm resource?
Currently, it's a non-firm model. Mm. So you negotiate a price for solar production, either on the user side of the meter as net metered, or on production side as value of distributed energy resource, where you negotiate a price per kilowatt hour, and then the developer develops its system and produces as many kilowatt hour can put in the system to maximize profit and at the negotiated price. So that approach, either net meter or value of distributed resource, is a good for small solar recipe. I don't think you can grow solar big time with that. And because part of transforming a variable kilowatt hour into an on-demand 24/7 kilowatt hour involves optimally curtailing some of the kilowatt hours. You're not going to negotiate all the kilowatt hours your unit produce, but only a fraction of it, a good fraction if you do it well, but still, and that's not in the current DNA. So the system has to evolve to take that into account.
So in terms of trying to kind of get our head around the challenge in New York State, if we were to achieve 50% renewables, we're talking about on a capacity basis, we're talking about roughly 17 gigawatts. In terms of solar in New York State today, I believe the goal is not much higher in the near term than 3 gigawatts. So if we're at 3 and you need to get to 17, even with folding wind in...
Well, if you're going to go 50%, you're going to have to go a lot more than 17. Because that's your peak power. You're going to need 5 times that. So you're talking 80, 85.
All right, help explain that to us.
So when you put 1 kilowatt of solar out there, it's working about 20% of the time. So if you want to have 1 kilowatt 24/7, you have to, by design, overbuild it.
Oh, correct. So on a kilowatt hour basis, right? I had mentioned on a capacity basis.
On a capacity basis, if you go 50%, you're going to be 17. But if you want to go 50% in terms of energy feed, you're going to have a lot more than that.
And again, getting back to the core challenge of this show, when we're thinking about climate, it needs to be not on a capacity basis, but
on
an
energy. You have to displace the conventional generation.
So the crux of the issue from your perspective and the findings of the report in Minnesota are saying that a deep penetration of solar requires a reframing of how solar is paid for and how developers inject the kilowatt hours into the grid, basically moving from a dumb kilowatt hour anytime it can be produced and just maximizing how many kilowatt hours to a kilowatt hour that maximizes the benefits to the grid, consumers, and the climate.
In short, you just have to remunerate a firm kilowatt hour and stop remunerating a variable kilowatt
hour. That is the fork in the road. Gotcha.
And that doesn't exist yet in New York. It's not even close to the thinking.
Right. So how does the paper, the Minnesota paper, does it lay out a regulatory strategy, or is it more an economic?
It's more of a potential upon which they are going to design the regulatory framework to make it happen. So the first step was to say, can we do it in Minnesota, and how much is that going to cost us technically? Now they have those numbers in place, and they are going to actually take their time to implement, hopefully, a smart system that will make it happen.
Excellent. Well, we want to thank Richard Perez once again for joining us on Climate Matters. This is a very provocative discussion about what it would take to get to deep penetrations of renewables and solar in particular. The tagline for the show is, "The Stone Age did not end because we ran out of stones." Transitioning to this kind of penetration of solar requires some of the fresh thinking that Richard and others are bringing to the table. And we very much appreciate your help in describing a relatively complex issue, Richard.
Thank you.
All right. We hope to see you again. Thanks again, Richard.